Fine, yeah. I'll just start the last sentence of it, just to get it across.
Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviyam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidvisha Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So then the sannyasi is speaking here. Thus I decided to take shelter at the feet of a Vaishnava. I left Kashi and went to Vrindavan Tham. There on page 5. There I saw many Vaishnavas who spoke of Sri Navadvip Tham. Go immediately into ecstasy and fall down to roll in the dust. My desire to see Navadvip increased greatly and after first circumambulating the area of Vrajadham, I started for Navadvip. I arrived here in Mayapur, and hearing your praises, I have come to find shelter at your feet. Kindly bestow your mercy upon me and accept me as your servant, making my life worthwhile and complete. Babaji Maharaj took a straw between his teeth and then spoke with a quavering voice. O Sannyasi Thakur, I am a useless soul. I have spoiled my life trying to maintain my body. I am unable to taste Krishna Prema. You are truly fortunate because you are blessed by seeing a real Vaishnava, and this meeting granted you the divine relish of Krishna Prema. I will remain ever grateful if, in the moments of your ecstatic Krishna Prema, you can remember a fallen wretch like me with fondness. Babaji Maharaj warmly embraced the sannyasi and showered him with the tears of joy streaming from his eyes. The sannyasi Thakur immediately experienced spiritual exaltation through the touch of a pure Vaishnava and began to cry and dance. Composing himself after singing and dancing for a while, sannyasi Thakur said, I surrender my body and life to you. I pray that I may spend the rest of my life here in your service. And so he has come to surrender, and then having surrendered, then he is asked to be the servant. Babaji Maharaj has expressed, that he feels he's not in such a position, but we notice that it doesn't go back and forth, the normal, like banter, the brahmacharis, I'm so fallen, no, I just said, no, but you're this, no, it just goes on and on like that. No, we just see is that he said that, the things, and then they just keep going. The sannyasi has what he has to say, so he's going with that. He's not, going into something else and getting to all these little, who's the most fallen,
Competition,
yeah, like that.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Why here Babaji Maharaj is saying, I will remain ever grateful if in the moments of your ecstatic Krishna prem you can remember a fallen wretch like me with fondness? Why Babaji Maharaj is saying that in the moments of your ecstatic Krishna prem, if you can remember.
Means, in other words, if someone is absorbed in Krishna so much, if at that time they remember somebody, that somebody would be benefited.
But his ecstasy will be disturbed, no?
Okay, so the problem we're feeling that the ecstasy would be disturbed. Okay? Why is someone in ecstasy? Because of Krishna praying. And what does Krishna praying mean? Think. think here, you know, use brain.
Topmost love of God.
Yes, love of God, so it means you're absorbed in Krishna. So the ecstasy is just a side thing. Your goal is not ecstasy. It's just a side thing. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's not a matter of ecstasy being disturbed or not that's a problem. If your goal is ecstasy, yes, then it's a disturbance. But ecstasy is not the goal.
But you'll be thinking other than Krishna.
Other than Krishna. Is there anything that's not Krishna? Is there anything that's not Krishna?
Everything is related to Krishna.
Everything is related to Krishna. Okay. So, who relates everything to Krishna? And who doesn't?
One who is pure devotee.
One is pure devotee, relates everything to Krishna. One who's not a pure devotee doesn't relate to Krishna. So, remembering a devotee for another devotee, would he see that in relation to Krishna? You understand? So the point is Krishna, if he wants to just experience that he is the supreme, he just has to remain as Atmarama. But to expand that happiness means it includes others. So Krishna is remembering everybody else. So it's not a problem that in remembering Krishna we're also remembering who he's remembering. You know what I'm saying? If someone has very much affection for his mother, and so if you talk about his mother, he's going to be upset. Why you're not talking about me? No, but I thought you liked your mother. He says, yeah, I like my mother. I talk about my mother. You talk about me. Is that how it works? you understand? So no, it's that whatever is in connection to Krishna, it's the same. Because Krishna's energy are non-different. But the point is that's just in the facts. But the point is it's the relationship that's important. What is accepted in the mood of relationship? Right? That's what's important.
So then if he remembers Babaji, then he will, in the moments of ecstasy, then he will receive mercy of Krishna?
Who's he?
Babaji will receive mercy of Krishna?
Yes. That's Babaji's point that he's making. Right? But he's saying this out of humility because it's the Babaji Maharaj who's the one who's in ecstasy and it's the other one who's, you understand? But he's making the point is that, you know, when you're absorbed in Krishna, if you remember me, then you're connected to that. Because if you're absorbed in Krishna, Krishna's happy. And if you're thinking of someone else, then that's connected with that whole scenario. Then Krishna becomes happy. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. Composing himself after singing and dancing for a while, Sannyasi Thakur said, I surrender my body and life to you. I pray that I may spend the rest of my life here in your service. Being well versed in all the scriptures, Sannyasi Thakur knew well that one should stay in the ashram of one's guru, known as the Gurukula, and there receive spiritual instruction. Thus he resolved to stay on in Prajumna Kunj, right? Because it's by association that one advances. Right? So that's why Prabhupada's created the temples and created the association, and as you create and expand the communities, the idea is to create association. Right? It's not a managerial structure, it's not, you know, some other thing or some economic thing. It's just the facility for association. So as that grows, that requires management, it requires money. Does that make sense? But that's to manage association.
Yep.
Right. So here we're dealing on a small level, so we don't have to worry about those things. Right? So, but the point being is that it's association that is important. So where you have devotees, then that opportunity is there that others can come and associate. And as they understand the process, then they are giving association to others, and this way it just expands. It keeps growing. Right? Does that make sense?
So in India, there are not so many institutions in the religion, like the Catholic Church. Is that because of the tradition of ashram?
Yes. It means you have tons of ashrams all over the place and all kinds of satsang is going on anywhere you go, and especially in any of the older places. There is so much going on because the Vedic principle is the institution. But it's not that it has to be an administrative institution. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. But it also makes it work very nicely. That's why Prabhupada started ISKCON, because then you can create something that you know it will, the association will go on. Right? It means you have the regular programs, you have the regular outings, you have regular activities that will generate association. Right? That's what it's for. You know, because devotees will sit around, so maybe they'll talk about Krishna, maybe they won't. So therefore you have the Bhagavatam class, the Gita class, you know, like that. You have the book distribution, Harinams, you know, you have the temple. So you're guaranteed that there is a certain amount of association. Can always be more, but at least that's the minimum that you know it'll work nice, right? Seeing the deities, Tulsi, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, chanting, like those are the most powerful. So those themselves, even though those are the Bhagavat platform, those are the ones that you specifically see are instituted that they go on, right? And then everything else then falls in place. Does that make sense? So that's what it's for. Otherwise, this is the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So this is how Prabhupada's put it together, and it's the most efficient of all the organizations like that. But the point is it's not the organization, it's the purpose of the organization. Right? But that doesn't mean that we don't need the organization. Right? You know, that's what's going to come up, and we'll see in the... Means in here you'll see, but also in the second class when we get into the second section, it will talk about the secondary activities, right? So varnashram and organization and all that. How it's not devotion, but it is a perfect medium to be engaged in devotion. You know, just like a pot is not devotion, but it's the perfect thing to use to cook, and that cooking process, that's devotional. You know what I'm saying? You know, the car is not devotion, but you use it to go to the temple. That makes it, in other words, it never becomes devotion, but it is the medium for devotion. So that way it becomes spiritualized. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it's Krishna's pot. After a few, you know, so in other words, oneself should resolve to be in the association of devotees. That's the point. Because you can have something that forces, but that doesn't work so well. You know, you look at it, means of civilizations that are there on the planet today, like that. Basically, you know, the Indian and the Chinese are the only ones that... there are elements that are going on today that have been going on for thousands and thousands of years. Every other one has changed. Right? You know, so people aren't living like Romans today in Italy, right? Or they're not living like Gauls in France, or they're not living, well, not necessarily, the Picts and everything up north of Hadrian's Wall, but depends on whose opinion you take. Right? You know, so... You know, so these kind of things is that it changes. You know, the culture changes, the lifestyle, everything, the values change. But these, because it's the individual's commitment to it, because there's the element of self-realization, right? And these other ones, it's simply, this is the social system. And this is how you can get power and money and influence and that. So they use it. And when it changes, they change along with it. But because the idea is self-realization... Therefore, it's an individual commitment. So because of that, we see the institution is stronger. Like that. Because the point is self-realization is the point, not, the institution itself. The institution is the secondary aspect, not the primary. Right? Because as soon as you make it the primary, it will fail with time. Because it's not the nature of the soul, so it will fail. Right. That makes sense. After a few days, Babaji Maharaj addressed Sannyasi Thakur, "O great one, let us visit today my spiritual master, Sri Prajumna Brahmachari Thakur, who has shown great compassion towards me and granted me sanctuary at his feet." Right, because they're staying in his kunja. That afternoon, after completing their Madhukari, they crossed the Ganga and arrived in Devapali, the residence of Sri Prajumna Kunja. I think Devapali is where the Nrisimha deity is. I'm not sure. Yeah, Nrisimhapali, Devapali. Upon seeing his guru, while still at a distance, Babaji Maharaj offered obeisances, prostrating himself fully upon the ground. Right? Because there's obeisances when you see, and there's obeisances when you are seen. Right? It's not that you see the person, you offer obeisances, but if they didn't see you, then when you get close and they see you, then you offer again. Not, oh, I already offered obeisances. But if from a distance they see you and you offer obeisances, then both are done at once, you know. So, you know, I mean, if you want to be efficient, you know, you can always, you know, yell or whistle or then offer obeisances. Then you know. Yeah, that's not exactly the purpose, right? Yeah. Sri Prajumna Brahmachari Thakur came out of the Sri Nrisimhadev temple and, lifting Babaji Maharaj up with both hands, lovingly embraced him and inquired about his well-being. They then sat down and discussed spiritual topics at length. Because here is that the inquiring about health or this and that, as we see in Bhagavatam, then Sukadeva Goswami is saying that the only thing on the material platform that one may ask for or worry about is, you know, proper health, proper well-being. Because if that's there, then you can do your service nicely. If you're sick, you don't do service so well. You know, but even if you are sick, you do whatever you can. But the idea is that that's the only, because anything else is not so important. Right? It's not that if you have money, then you can do service. And if you don't have money, you can't. You know, or if you have a house, you can or not, or nice clothes or not. No, it's only health is something that helps a lot. So that's why then here, inquiring about the health is a pretty standard thing. It's not that, oh, that's so mundane. Right? You just have it. If it's healthy, it means then the service is going on nicely. You know that there's no obstacles. Yes?
This element of lifting him, is that part of the
it just makes it easier for them to get up because they're, you know, absorbed in ecstasy, so therefore. But also just, you know, being humble, so you know, you're making the point that's not so necessary. You understand? There's the point is you may say it's not important, but it is important, so the person does it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, it's just like, the sannyasi is surrendered, and then Babaji has said, you know, well, I'm so useless, so if you'll please bless me, and you're, you know, but he just goes on, so yeah, therefore I should stay at the ashram and get the association. You know, it's not that, you know, he says, you know, it's not like Gorkhasharas Babaji Maharaj says that after I die, he should drag my body through the streets of Navadvip, and then go, no, Guru Maharaj said this is what he wants. You know, no, it's not like that. It's that you have to understand what is their humility, their realization. You go by what are your duties is what you're supposed to do, right? The disciple's duty is to respect the spiritual master. You know, and the spiritual master is to see himself as the humble servant of his spiritual master. So his being humble doesn't mean that now you don't do your duties of respect. Okay. They then sat down and discussed spiritual topics at length. Finally, Babaji Maharaj turned to Sannyasi Thakur and introduced him in detail to Prajumna Brahmachari Thakur, who then addressed him affectionately, "My dear son, you have found the proper spiritual master. Now try to sincerely study the Prema Vivarta from the able Paramahamsa Prem Das Babaji." Right. So here is their discussion, what's natural. Right? And then it comes to the point, okay, now we talk about the grand disciple, right? And then, you know, getting the blessings and all that, because it's the main is the association there. Following the example of his guru, Sannyasi Thakur offered prostrate obeisances to Sri Prajumna Brahmachari Thakur, whom he now saw as his Paramaguru. He humbly replied, Prabhu, your compassionate glance can purify many thousands of arrogant sannyasis like me, so I beg for your mercy. Having previously never learnt the rules of Vaishnava etiquette, Sannyasi Thakur keenly observed the ensuing dealings between his guru and param guru, right? Because where he's from, you walk down the street, and when you meet another sannyasi going the other way, then you go, not I, and not I, and you know, it says, oh, yes, you are God, and he says, yes, you are God. You know, so that's the etiquette. You know? Not that you go, not I, and not I, and he goes, yes, that's right, thank you. No, he has to also say, yes, you're also God. Yeah, you're God, yes, and you're also God. Yes, we're all God. Yes, isn't this great? You know, that's what they do as etiquette. So he hasn't seen proper etiquette. You know, so that's why now he's watching very carefully. So the idea is that you learn, you hear, and you see. Right? These are the best ways of learning. So it's not that he makes himself the center of attention, not that he's the new kid around, so therefore it should all be about him. No. You come in, you learn what's going on. This is previously, you know, standard etiquette. You're new. You watch what's going on. Now the thing is, you're new, so therefore you're the center. You don't know anything. Everyone's thing's got to stop. It's all about you. You know what I'm saying? And so therefore, you know, what's the fun of being new? I mean, of being old. You have to be new. You know, but the old etiquette is being old. That's what's good. Being new, that's more of a... Right? So therefore, you watch. You see. Right? Yes. A little loudly.
Here, Babaji Maharaj is having his spiritual master.
Yes.
So, like, I have heard that if one spiritual master is present, then he should not take disciples.
He should not take disciples.
I have heard like that. So
you have heard like that.
Babaji Maharaj is taking.
So what does that mean? Take disciples. Did you see he before this that Babaji Maharaj accepted the sannyasi? No, the sannyasi accepted him, and he's staying in the ashram. You know, he didn't kick him out or something. Then he says, after a few days, right? Why is he going to wait a few days? Right? They're going to go now see his spiritual master. But why a few days? Why not immediately?
If the person is serious.
Yeah, to see how, you know, if it, you know, otherwise he comes in, there's that moment of sentiment. No, to see just how his mood. So he's observing him. He's proper, so he sees, okay, there's potential. Now they go see his spiritual master. Right? And so then what happens? Does the Babaji mention that here's my new disciple? No, he just says that. He's come to the ashram. He was looking for a Vaishnava association. So then what happens?
His spiritual master asks him to...
Yeah, so then Prajumna Brahmachari, then he tells the sannyasi that now you have a good guru. So in other words, you don't take disciples on your own, but if the spiritual master says it's okay, you do that. Does that make sense? You know, like we've had in, you know, in the society, there's been those that they wanted to take disciples, but it didn't happen. But others, it wasn't what they were looking for, the spiritual master wanted them to take disciples. So then that was arranged. You understand? So the point is that the spiritual master, in other words, the spiritual master is there, why would you be taking disciples? But if he thinks it's a good idea, then what's the problem? Right? The point is when it says the disciple does not take disciples when the spiritual master is present, who's the order for? The spiritual master or the disciple? Yes, but the order is not... The spiritual master should not allow his disciple to take disciples while he's present. Is that the rule? No, because that would mean then the spiritual master sees something like that doesn't happen. The rule is that the disciple doesn't take disciples while the spiritual master is present. It's not his idea. But if the spiritual master thinks this is a good idea, that's not an anxiety. Does that make sense? That's why we have to be able to discriminate. Yes.
Yes, Maharaj. These are so fine points which I many times easily just misunderstand. So I have to use the brains to understand the difference.
Yes.
I've been wondering the same thing.
Yes, yes. Mm. Yes. I mean, so the whole idea is that we're trying to learn how to analyze so that you can see the difference. You know, just like You have a, let's say we have a potato.
Yes.
Okay? Or let's get more specific. A bucket of halva. Okay, is the bucket of halva good?
Yes.
Okay, so we eat the bucket. You're not going to eat the bucket. So why won't you eat the bucket?
Because the bucket is not good.
The bucket is not good.
The halva is good.
But the halva is good. Okay, so if the bucket's not good, we don't throw out the halva. And because the halva is good, it doesn't mean we don't keep the bucket.
True.
That's the point. We have to know the difference so we know what we're going to eat, what we're not going to eat. Right? That's the whole thing with the philosophy, is these fine points, because we have a tendency to, if there's any little fault, we throw the whole thing out. Or if we're being sentimental, if there's one little bit of good, everything's good. Like that. But no, you have to know what you take, what you don't take. Yes?
You can eat the whole bucket of halva.
Yes, you can eat the whole bucket of halva, but not the bucket. Like that. Yes.
So Maharaj, if anything is good, I accept everything. Or if anything is bad, I reject everything. They're just two opposing sides.
Those are opposing. That's generally what happens. You know, it's just like the person's, let's say, a senior devotee, but if you find you in your mind or something, you know, whether it's there or not, you find a fault, then you reject everything. You know, or there's somebody, you know, you go outside, you went to some yoga conference and some guy was speaking, so therefore that was good, and so now everything he says is good. So you ask even about your spiritual life or this or that. No. He knows yoga. That's it. That's where it ends. And the other one knows the spiritual, and if there's a weakness, you don't bother with that aspect. You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone leads very nice kirtan and all that. And, you know, nice devotee, but when he takes prasad, it's a bit of a trip. So you don't sit next to him during prasad. You know, he's not your, you know, prasad guru. Yeah, you know. You know, you find the guy with the bucket of halva. That's Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is you find what's good, you take that, and what's not good, you leave it. You know, I was going to say like the potato, but it depends. But like potatoes there, but you don't necessarily use the peel. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so it's just what it's for. Like that. Yes?
So Maharaj, it seems that between the sannyasin and Babaji, it is a perfect example of guru and disciple.
Yes, here's there. Because there's a natural respect. Because the point is if someone is a good disciple, that means there's something there to respect. Otherwise, how will be a good disciple? So then that proper respect is given and dealings there. Just because one's a guru doesn't mean that one's not respectful towards others. And one's not humble. That's just the relationship. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, it's position of the father, someone says the son. But, you know, if the father is always trying to establish that he's the father and always talking about, hey, he's the superior and this and that, it's uncomfortable for the son. Though it is the fact. But if he's very, you know, how you say, you know, comfortable and relaxed and they have a very, you know, nice rapport, then that's very good. But if the son gets out of hand and the father, you know, establishes what's correct, that will be respected by the son. You know, so that's the whole point, is that the natural thing of natural relationships, that is trying to, is what is established by the Vedic culture, though tendency is people try to find the not natural, but anywhere you go in the world you'll find elements of this natural culture being practiced. You know, you go to some village somewhere and there's some, you know, old grandpa and everybody likes him. And, you know, he's like kind of in the village, he's respected because he respects everybody else. You know, the guy who doesn't respect anybody is the one that nobody respects. Okay? You know what I'm saying? So you can find it everywhere. You can find the real culture everywhere. The problem is just they don't see that this is what's important and its connection to the Lord. That's why it works. So that's why then Krishna consciousness, you scientifically go through and understand what's what. Then you know what to keep and what to get rid of. So that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's point, is that whatever it is, it doesn't matter. There's something valuable there. Otherwise, why would people be interested? If no one's interested, means there's nothing of value for you. But if there's an interest, means there's something of value, but you have to know what is of value and what's not. You know, you have to know what's the halva and what's the bucket. like that. But the bucket has its value and it holds the halava. But that's, you know, where it ends. You know, but then some will say, because no, but without the bucket you can't have the halava there. So therefore the bucket becomes more important. That's also a philosophy. You know, because without money then you can't run this institution, therefore money is the most important. People will say that. Or without management then this festival wouldn't have happened, so managers, no. The festival is still more important. The secondary attributes are what manifest the primary. But the point is on their own, what do they manifest? You just have a bucket, so what? You know? The point is the bucket becomes a value when the halava is there. Mm-hmm. If there's no halava, well, who cares? Right? Right?
True.
Yeah, see? Mm-hmm. Does this make sense? So the point is it's true that you will get no manifestation without the secondary. That's why the secondary is important. But the point is it's only with the manifestation of the primary that the glories of the secondary are appreciated. Mm-hmm. So that's why all these other things other than Krishna consciousness are all secondary. And they're important in that they manifest Krishna consciousness, but they're not the cause of manifestation. Right? The person went out and distributed the books, but he's not the cause of the books being distributed. It's Krishna's the cause. We're simply the instrument. Right? But because you're involved, you get credit. Right? That's why devotees are important, because they're involved in the process. Does that make sense? Yes.
It seems we have a tendency to get attached to the form that we are used to, be it
yes.
book distribution or
yes.
cooking, or and we start to confuse it to think that that actually is the devotion.
That is the devotion, and anything, any other form is
it's
not.
Less or
you know, you're a book distributor, everybody else is, you know, not up to the standard.
Yeah.
Right? And because you're up to the standard, you should come back and you should get the proper place in the darshan, you should get, you know, first get charanamrita, you should get the class, you should get the nice prasad, a good place to stay, someone else will clean the place. But what you didn't notice is that everybody else had to do all those things. So if they didn't do, if they're not important, then they shouldn't be doing all those things. Everyone should only be distributing books. Mm-hmm. And so then after you distribute the books, there's no place to go back to. There is no prasad, and there is no place to sleep. Of course, that's why, you know, God made, you know, vans. So you can sleep in the back of that, right? You know, so.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's true.
Yeah. Vans and kitchen, right? So.
Yeah, that's... What do you mean?
I say cream cheese.
Huh? Yeah, well, that's the American side. That's it. Europeans haven't figured that one out.
No.
Either that or they don't want to figure it out. I'm not sure. But how about the can of Planters peanuts? Yeah. Okay.
Condensed milk.
Yeah, that also. That works really good. Yeah, I wonder if it means if you take the condensed milk, you get a lot of energy for a very short time. But if you take the cream cheese, it puts you to sleep for a long time. You know?
So
what if you took the two together? Then would that mean you get a lot of energy, but it would be spread out over a long time? Now that would be a very worthwhile scientific experiment. Yeah, yeah.
Energetic sleep.
Huh?
Energetic sleep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, could be. Yeah, could. Okay. Having previously never learnt the rules of Vaishnava etiquette, Sannyasi Thakur keenly observed the ensuing dealings between his guru and Paramaguru. Right? So in other words, again, it's not about himself. It's about what's going on and then how you fit into that. Realizing that this was the standard of behavior, he resolved to emulate it unreservedly. Right, so here again, he put in the point. Now he established the point of association, and now he's establishing the point of Vaishnava etiquette. Right, because in the association, that's what you'll learn. Right, in the Gurukul environment, that's what is the main thing to learn. Because you can go anywhere and learn an academic subject or a skill. Right, but even then, if you're observant, you'll pick up what is the nature of such persons. Right? Babaji Maharaj and Sannyasi Thakur stayed for the Sandhya Arati and afterwards returned to Godruma. The days passed quickly, and Sannyasi Thakur developed the desire to ask Babaji Maharaj certain philosophical questions. Having developed Brahmanishta from his previous training, he was now developing realization of the divine pastimes of the Parambrahma, right? Because he understood Brahman and just how everything's Brahman and how to be fixed in that. So therefore, he was able to do a sadhana nicely. He was able to be fixed like this. But now he's developing the thing of Parabrahman, that this Brahman is from the Lord, right? So in other words, you're seeing the situation is Brahman, the qualities that you're seeing manifest is Brahman, so therefore you're learning all that. But what about the person that this is all coming from? Right? Because we've gotten into is the Vaishnava etiquette and interaction with devotees. We haven't actually discussed the philosophy yet. Though, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has taught many things already, you know, very carefully. Having developed Brahmanishta from his previous training, he was now developing a realization of the divine pastimes of the Parabrahma, Sri Krishna. And so, concomitantly, he was gradually developing true humility and meekness. Right? So, in other words, the Vedic system will develop the understanding of Brahman if you follow it properly. But the point is if it's not connected to the Lord, you won't understand Parabrahma. So that's what was lacking. He came to the Brahman platform, but it didn't give the satisfaction he was looking for, right? So by coming in contact with Parabrahman, then he knows that there's something more here. Yes?
This Vedic system develops this Brahman Gyana through many, many lifetimes.
Yes, like that. So we can understand if he developed in this lifetime, he's been doing it a long time. You know, general standards is thousands of lifetimes. So this is the one where it actually, you know, came up. So that's why if you follow the Vedic system without Krishna consciousness, it's very slow. It will elevate you, but very slow, but only can get you up to the Brahman platform. But if you follow a connection with Krishna consciousness very quickly, then one will be Krishna conscious and all these other aspects will come along. So that's why for us, Varnashram on its own, it won't happen. We don't have the qualifications. You have to be inherently pious. Right? We don't have that piety. But if you follow the Vedic, but Krishna consciousness is the most pious activity. And it's the most quick of purification. So that will generate real piety. So now if practicing Krishna consciousness, you practice the Vedic culture, you know, the Vaishnava etiquette, then that's going to be the quickest to purify you. Right? In other words, the primary is Krishna consciousness, the secondary is the Vedic culture as a support. Right? That's what's quick. That's why it's recommended. You know, just like we're only interested in devotion, so those things that are helpful in devotion, then they're useful. So that's why the Vedic culture is discussed, because it's useful. So we see throughout the Prabhupada's Prabhupada's books, then a philosophical point is being made, and then there's the cultural aspect that supports that. So constantly you see that Varnashram is being discussed throughout the purports. It means every purport would be discussing some philosophy. But then many of the purports, the cultural aspect is being brought out. Right? So that you know how they connect. What's the support? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we want the halava in the bucket. So you have to also discuss how the bucket works. Otherwise, if you put the bucket upside down, try to put the halava, not so much. You turn it right side up, okay. But if it's on the side, also a problem. You know what I'm saying? So you have to know how it works, like that. And then you try to pick it up without the handle, very difficult. But if you pick it up with the handle, very easy. You know, so therefore, if we know the bucket, we know how to use it for carrying the halava. Does that make sense? So that's why we study Vedic literature, we study these material skills and knowledge, is simply their value in Krishna consciousness. They don't have a value on their own, nothing. The difficulty is when devotees feel that it has a value on its own. Right? Modern academia has a value on its own. Modern the political correctness or morality or management or economics, you know, does that make sense? Or the way you address it has a value on its own. That's where a mistake is made. It doesn't have a value on its own. Because, you know, how valuable is a mirage? Right? A mirage doesn't have any value. Right? For the person experiencing it, you know, it's maybe nice. But other than that, then what's the use? So that's the point, is that when it's connected to Krishna, then it's no longer a mirage. Because Krishna is real. This other stuff is not. It's connected to Krishna, it's real. Real meaning that it gives eternal results. It means it exists. The mirage is actually there. But the point is it's not, you can't get any benefit from it. So the soul can't get benefit from anything material, no matter what knowledge or facilities or situation, if it's not connected to the Lord. In illusion, we think, yes, no, this will be good, but it's not. Yes?
Maharaj, the reason why it's seen that it's not discussed culture so much is the lack of perception that culture is, as you mentioned before, the unfold of philosophy, like the natural manifestation.
Yes, it means there's, we don't see the connection. Because what does culture do? Means that, let us take it in the modern context of, you know, freedom and truth and doing, what does culture do to that?
It supports,
but over a long time, so it restricts. You can't just say anything you want. You can't just dress any way you want. You can't just behave any way you want, because you have to consider everybody else. The fun part is when we say free, everybody thinks, yeah, great. But we talk about free as if it's for everybody. But the reason I want freedom is for myself. You know what I'm saying? You know, the person's not interested, everybody else is free. I won't be. You know, I want to be free. Now, if others also can take advantage of that, great. You know, so it's all about themselves. So that's why socially things break down. But if you have a structure, then you can hold it together. Now, of course, then you can say, but then that's artificial. No, but then what's not artificial? You know what I'm saying? The modern educated person, isn't that artificial to go to school? The kid doesn't want to go to school. He just wants to play all day. You know, he just wants to run around naked and play all day. So that would be natural. Anything other than that would be artificial, according to the definition. Because they don't know what a human being is, therefore they call it artificial. The point is that if you're following the rules but don't know what they're for, then though it makes a structure, you don't get the experience that you should be getting. So that's the complaint, is I'm not getting a good experience. If people get a good experience, then what's the problem? Does that make sense? You know, if I just go into the kitchen and just take anything and throw it around and do this and that, and you know, it may have been fun, but it's not necessarily get anything worthwhile to eat. But if I restrict myself and don't throw it around and everything goes in the pot and, you know, in a proper way, then it may have taken longer and more restrictive, but I get a very good result. So in other words, people aren't using their intelligence. It's all about themselves. So as soon as they see anything where I cannot control or enjoy, or better, both, then immediately that's when the protest comes up. Nobody makes any protest if their controlling and enjoying is uncompromised. But as soon as there's a compromise, that's when the complaint. So if anybody opposes something that's actual proper, the opposition is simply because it gets in the way of my control or my enjoying. It's that simple. That's why we're here. So that's why all we have to do is get rid of, I'm not the controller, I am servant. Krishna's the controller. And I'm not the enjoyer, Krishna's the enjoyer. That's the essence of the philosophy. Therefore, I engage myself in pleasing Krishna. That's the whole philosophy in a nutshell. Right? Yeah. But what that does is it deals with that primordial sin. You know, I'm God. I'm the controller and enjoyer. And that's what everything does. So even here, he's the sannyasi. But it brings it up to the point, I am God. you know, though he has no facility and nothing to enjoy. You know, Nakarmi has a facility, but he wants to be God, you know, but so, you know, you can't have both, you know. Yes.
So it seems that a lot of people in the West are very determined not to understand this point. So when I get frustrated about that, is that because I'm not controlling and enjoying my preaching?
No. It's just a means you have to control yourself. In other words, frustrated in the process, the path that you've taken there. The point is find what it is that they're attached to and use that as the central point. Because Krishna is the center of all relationships. So the thing is take what is the central point, but connect that to Krishna. You know, the freedom. So yes, you know, it's the freedom. So yes, it means the living entity, the whole idea is being freed from, you know, this material entanglement and everything like that. So in other words, whatever is that situation or the activity or the identity or whatever it is that it's that value to them.
Yeah.
You take that and make that the point of the conversation. Because every quality comes from Krishna. You know what I'm saying? And so, but you have to find what it is, because they might even be talking the negative quality. But that negative quality is representing something that's positive.
Yeah, so that'll...
So you just have to get it back to the positive, because even sometimes they don't know what they're looking for, like that. And then it works. One day at sunrise, Babaji Maharaj sat in the calmness of the Madhavi Grove, chanting Hari Nam upon his Tulsi Mala. Soon he entered in deep meditation on the Nishanta Lila, the dawn pastimes of the divine couple. In his Siddha Deha, he executed in meditation the devotional duties assigned to him in these pastimes. Right. Still deep in meditation, Babaji Maharaj called out, "O Shaki, quickly silence that hag of a monkey, Kakati. She will disturb the blissful sleep of our most dear Radharani and Govinda. You are Radharaman Mandri, and having been given this duty, you should execute it conscientiously." Realizing that the words were addressed to him, Sannyasi Thakur understood at that moment both his Siddha Deha and his specific devotional service. Thus he began to ready himself for these new devotional assignments. After sunrise, Babaji Maharaj showed signs of slowly coming back to external consciousness. He then began to chant quietly upon his mala. Taking this opportunity, Sannyasi Thakur sat near Babaji Maharaj and addressed him, "Dear Master, your poor servant would like to ask a question." Babaji Maharaj replies, "As you are a most fit candidate, I will try my best to answer any question you have." In other words, recognizing the qualification to ask questions, and that one will do one's best to answer, because that's all we can do. Sannyasi Thakur said, "Prabhu, what is the true dharma of mankind? If there actually is but one dharma, then why are the numerous religious leaders not in agreement and following that singular spiritual path?" Okay.
Good question.
Yeah, yes.
It's interesting that he's been exposed to a very elevated subject. He's asking primary subject, primary instruction first.
Yeah, well, the point is this is the point. You know, that's the thing. Is no, you get exposed, and then you ask all kinds of other things that aren't important. The point is what is the actual dharma? Means if there's only one dharma, why is it everybody's not agreeing on that? Right? Because that's the one thing that's there. Because the other thing, that's just the fact. You know what I'm saying? One Siddha Deha, that's just the fact. Now what are you going to do with it? That's what's important. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of, in other words, these things are the idea is to demystify these things. Otherwise, one makes it into a whole thing like that, but it's not. It's that's just a fact. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
And we can also see that the process of revealing one's Siddha Deha is working on the proper platform of advancement, as in his case,
Yeah.
And prior to this, it is just fiction, right?
It's not so much fiction. It's just that it doesn't have any meaning. Just like, you know, the child's born, yes, he will inherit the father's, you know, estate, but it doesn't have any meaning right now. You know, now he's got to, you know, learn to brush his teeth and, you know, put on his shoes, you know, stuff like that, you know. Walk without falling over on his face. You know, he's got to start with the more essential. Because if he doesn't do that, he can't manage the estate. Like that. Also, we have the element here is that the sannyasi is already Brahmanishta. So he's already on the Brahman platform. So now, from the Brahman platform to go into actual Brahma-Bhuta, that's where he's making the transference. So this will apply very nicely here. But it's not necessarily going to apply to us, which are not necessarily on that Brahma-Nishta platform. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But we'll see that the etiquettes and everything that goes through, that all applies to us. Because the point is the Vaishnava lifestyle applies to everyone. It's just that what level of interaction you're using in the way of realization, that will be different. But as far as the external etiquette, the observable etiquette, that's going to be the same for everybody. Yes.
We can correspond to this level of Brahmanishta to our Nishta on the levels of advancement.
No, the Nishta is after Narta Nivriti, before Ruchi. Here we're talking about Nishta, meaning beyond that. He's on the Brahman platform. So he's liberated. But he hasn't come in contact with the Krishna consciousness. So his faith is developed. He's taken up sadhu sangha, and now he's seen the Vaishnava etiquette, so now he's following Bhajana Kriya. But because he is Brahmanishta, there's not going to be necessarily anarta nivriti. Right? And so then, basically, very quickly, by this point, he's already at nishta within the process. But you see, when he comes in contact, he has a great taste, an attachment for the holy name. That's why he went looking. In other words, all these elements are happening, but you know, with time, then they all fall into their natural place. So that's the point, is by associating with devotees, it doesn't matter which one comes up. You know? So it means, in other words, he got a taste, and from getting a taste, you know, then that develops into attachment, then he got faith. The point is it's not going to become prema until it's complete. Right? But it doesn't matter where you start, as long as it works. There is a natural way of starting. You know, because how often do you come across, you know, someone on the Brahman platform, you know, in your, you know, Harinam or something, you know, like that. So most people start from, you know, Shraddha, right there. Then they like this, but he's already knows the process, the Vedic process and all that, and so then he can see this is something beyond. So the essential points he's keeping, because he also only came to Brahma-Bhuta by association with other like-minded sannyasis. So he knows that he was living in an ashram. Right? You know, so he was doing all those things, but now he's seeing that now this is another thing, so that must have its own. So therefore, instead of living in an ashram with Mayavadis, you're in an ashram with Vaishnavas. They have their etiquette, now you follow the etiquette of the Vaishnavas. Right, they have their understanding of the philosophy, now you have the understanding of the Vaishnavas. Right, so therefore, all the elements are there, but they work very smoothly.
Just checking, so Shraddha through Bhav can come up in any order or...
Yes.
But prema is when all of them have found their perfect state?
Means when bhava, because the point is it'll bring you to the point of bhava, bhava won't progress unless... you're associating with advanced devotees.
But you can have glimpses of Bhav even.
Yeah, means otherwise, what is it that, you know, the person comes to the Sunday feast and they're dancing in ecstasy and this and that and, you know, like that. Yeah. So, you know, I bucket of hollow, you know, all these different things, you know, like that, you know, natural spontaneous attraction. So, does that make sense? So all these things are there, it's just a matter of, but they're not consistent.
Yeah.
They're there when you're in the associate, but when you're not, it drops. Right? If Babaji Maharaj, whether he's in the association or not, from what we see, then he's always on that platform. So that's steady. Does that make sense? So the point is these things are there, but they don't last because you doesn't have the practices and the understandings and all that. So therefore, now you get the understandings because you see that taste is available. So what do I have to do to maintain that? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Get a bigger bucket.
Huh?
Get a bigger bucket.
Yeah, it's a bigger bucket. One with wheels. Right? You know. Get a bathtub. Babaji Maharaj quietly began his dissertation while worshipping the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu within his mind. Right? So, 'cause it's only by the grace of the Lord that one can say something, one can speak something. O fortunate one, a vastu, eternal entity, or substance, inherently possesses a permanent nature, or eternal occupational activity, known as its nitya dharma. Right? It means, in other words, vastu is substance. Mm. Right? So whatever it is, something with substance. You know, in other words, anything that exists, right? Because Krishna is substance, so something exists only because it's of its connection to Krishna. Right? So therefore, everything has substance. But you have to know what that substance is. So everything has its eternal, its permanent nature and eternal occupational duty or activity. So the difficulty is with non-Vedic is we want to say that something doesn't have an eternal nature, right? A permanent nature. We want to say, no, well, that was the old nature. Now there's the new nature, right? But then it doesn't function. Right? But no, it has its nature. You have to understand what it is. But it has its eternal occupational duty. Right? The permanent nature is there, but then there's the occupational duty that goes with it. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it has its nature. Like, let's say you have a lamp. It has its nature. You can burn fire in it. That's what you can do with it. Right, and a limited amount of fire, not an unlimited amount. So, it's, in other words, it can burn a controlled amount of fire that you can use, you know, in a proper way to make light. Does that make sense? That's its nature. Now, the natural occupation is that it's engaged for lighting things in connection with Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? So the problem is people don't see the eternal occupation. They don't even see the permanent nature. So then you have a lot of problems. It becomes very confusing. By force of circumstance, right, or by contact with other substances, the original character of the vastu may apparently be transformed and changed, right? So the vastu in a different situation may seem to be changed by that environment, but you can't actually change it. It just may not be able to manifest nicely its nature. Because that's what it says, apparently transformed or changed. In the course of time, when this transformed character becomes stable, it then appears to be a seemingly permanent quality of the vastu, apparently being the genuine, original, eternal, and immanent nature. Right? So this can be applied to anything. But he's specifically applying it to the soul. The soul has come here. It's in a changed environment. So it takes on this changed nature, and it becomes stable in that. So it appears now this is the actual nature. Right? Being a materialist is the actual nature of the soul. This assumed nature of a vastu is its naimittic dharma, temporary nature. Because you have nitya dharma and naimittic. So this is not just like in a particular situation. Let's say you have the head of state. You know, so his administering all the different things is his permanent nature. But there may be something, he's walking down the hallway and something's out of place. So let's say a chair or something, or the garbage can fell over, so he, you know, makes it correct. But it's not that, okay, now he's the, you know, the janitor. No, that's naimittic. You know, he's doing that because somebody else didn't do it. You know what I'm saying? But the situation appears to change. Thus, the inherent nature, Swabhava, is the eternal religion of Avastu, the Nitya Dharma. In contrast, the assumed nature of Avastu, or Nisarga, is its Naimittika Dharma, temporary nature. Right? So we have to be able to discern what's the eternal and what's temporary. But eternal we can only understand from Shastra. Even temporary we can only understand from Shastra, because the temporary nature that it's taken on is the permanent nature of something else. You know what I'm saying? It's by association, it seems that, like, matter does what matter does best. Just kind of be, unconscious, nebbish. It's nebbishness, right? Does that make sense? But the difficulty is then the living entity in that association takes on those qualities. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yes.
Are you talking about the different categories of things, like Sankhya categorizes things, how things have got certain qualities?
We're going back to, because Shankya is qualifying something that the qualities are already there. We're talking about how the qualities are there, because Krishna has created them that way. So that's the inherent nature. Then you can analyze what is that nature. Does that make sense? Because the nature has already been given by God, then Shastra defines that so that we know, because Krishna creates according to the scriptures. Right, because he wrote the scriptures, how he's going to create, right? So it works out, right? So now Sri Thakur then asks, kindly further elucidate the definitions of Vastu and Svabhava, right? So now you can see what level we're working on here of depth of this, and that you think that he would be asking, but what would be the Vaishnava way of getting rid of an old monkey? No, but the point is it's what is the inherent nature? Because the point is that's the nature, but I'm acting according to a nature that's not actually the nature. I'm identifying as a sannyasi, I'm identifying, in so many other ways. So the real nature is there, because when we say the soul is servant of God, that means eternally, that means you have eternal position in which you serve God. But unless you appreciate that position of Vastu, how are you going to function within it? Because even if we're talking about Bhav Sadhana, which this is the first stage of Bhav Sadhana, the point is that Shravana Dasa means that one hears about one's position. But Shravana Dasa starts back with, you understand, I'm not the body, I'm the soul. It finds its full manifestation when I'm servant of God, but I am this particular servant of God. Yes. Right? And I have these particular activities to be performed. That's your situation. It's the situation. So people get all inspired about the situation. But the point is what is, here they're talking, what's the nature? Right? So the point is if you don't understand nature, how do you know what to do with that? Okay, you've chased a monkey away. Now what? That took how many seconds? 10 seconds. Okay, now you have another 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 40 seconds. What are you going to do with that? That's the question. Therefore, we're discussing what's the Vastu. You understand? Yes.
Last year we have touched some quotes from 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where it was said that, I don't remember exactly, that there was like eternal svabhava and conditioned svabhava and circumstantial svabhava. So this nisarga refers to those two latter svabhavas.
Yes, means the point is that you have your eternal nature and you have your conditioned nature. But within the conditioned nature, you have the specific at the moment. You think you're the controller and enjoyer, that's a taken on. But now you think you're a controller and enjoyer, you're from this country or this age and you have this position. And then even within that is, yes, you have all that, but now you happen to be riding on the bus. So you have to act in that way. You know what I'm saying? So there's always the circumstantial is affecting whatever is the nature, but then that nature is still a taken on nature from the original nature. Like that. So you could say the material is the situation that changes. But within that, there's always something that, and then within that, and then within that, you know what I'm saying? You know, you're going, so you want to eat dinner, so now where you go to dinner, that creates the situation. Now within that, you go to the dinner, now where you sit at the table, you know, where the table is in the place, and then where you sit at the table, and then all the things on the table, and then, you know, you say, you're always constantly, it's being modified. And so then you have to apply the nature according to that. You know what I'm saying? But in the same way, we take it back a step as that we're a devotee. Right? So then it's a matter of taking that and bringing it to applying that in the particular situation we're in.
Sabhava defines dharma.
Yes. Dharma is what the Sabhava is. Dharma means what's the inherent nature. Svabhava means, you know, specifically just talking about the quality. You know, dharma is kind of like what the nature is, but more emphasis on what you'll do with it. Svabhava is what is the nature, what qualities are there.
Sankarshan and
Pradyumna. Means it would be, both would be Sankarshan, but it's a matter of what is the purposes and what are the of the nature. In other words, within Sankarshan it would be, because Sankarshan deals with all the other three. Right? Means in theory. So it would be, yes. So one is looking at Sankarshan, what is the Sankarshan, one is Sankarshan, you know, Prajumna Aniyudhavasade. You're looking at these two. So it's just one brings out the one brings out the other. You know what I'm saying? So when someone starts to do something that's not, they're not supposed to do, you immediately point out what's the position. Because the position includes the activities. You know, or you say, you're not supposed to do that. Why not? Because your position is different. You go back to the position, and from the position then you move forward. Does that make sense?
Right, the discussion in the second chapter of Gita we went through last year. When Arjuna asked, what's Brahman, what's the self, what's Adhyatmika? Then we discuss Brahman, Adhyatmika, and Svabhava too. So you mentioned Brahman is like the nature, like what a child is in childhood. Mm-hmm. Adhyatmika, what did the child do? It played. Mm-hmm. And Svabhava was the, let's say, the impression of the past sense times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
So is that also
this? Yeah, you can. It means the reality is that we are supposed to be in the spiritual platform. And so that kind of samskara is what is supposed to be functioning. But we tend to function on our conditioned samskara. So that will then inherit, because depending on the samskara is what's going to be the nature now. Whatever it is you think of at the time of death, what you think of is going to be accumulation of what you've done. And so that will create what you have now. So all these things are connected. They're just different synonyms that bring out a different aspect. You know, like in any word, you have a general concept. And then all the synonyms are connected to that general concept, but they each bring out a different aspect of it. You know? Does that make sense? Like that. You know, it's like, say, you say, beauty, you know, then that will generally mean the balance of everything. You know, let's say if say cuteness, then it will be that innocent attractiveness. You know, if we say ravishing, then it brings out the kind of like the intensity of the sensual aspect of the beauty. Or, you know what I'm saying? But it's all dealing with the same aspect. But it's just whichever one it is, it brings out. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj, when Srila Prabhupada was speaking, he didn't place much emphasis on Siddha Sri.
No, well, you see here also Bhaktivinoda Thakura. didn't.
Is that the discouraged sabbatism? Or?
Yeah, because then you unnecessarily get involved in something that's not important. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, teenage kids. What do they sit around talking about all day? Right? What should they be talking about? What they're supposed to be doing as teenagers, right? They're supposed to be going to school, learning, doing their work, you know, interacting with people, you know, in a human way, you know, stuff like that. But instead, they're always talking about something that they're not supposed to be talking about. Right? So that's the... The talker then asks, kindly further elucidate the definitions of vastu and swabhav. Babaji Maharaj answers, the Sanskrit word vastu is a derivative of the word vas, which means to exist or to dwell. Right? So that's why vastu means, you know, the dwelling or the existence of something. You know, the place that exists. The place exists. It's where you're going to dwell. Right? So there's a connection there. If the existence isn't properly, the dwelling's not going to be proper. Yes.
Vastu Shastra is Shastra about existence.
I mean, that's what we're saying, is that's what it is. But it specifically is applying existence of you know, buildings, yeah. Vehicles, yeah. Furniture, and land. But the point is everything has that. We were just making the connection, showing the connection there.
Okay.
Therefore, Vastu means that which exists being self-evident and perceivable. Vastus of two kinds, vastava vastu and avastava vastu. Vastava vastu is transcendental truth, eternal spiritual substance. Avastava vastu is matter, temporary objects possessing inert qualities, having but an illusory semblance of the actual eternal reality. Right, so vastava vastu means, it says real existence, the really real thing. That's vastava vastu. And avastava vastu is the not really real thing. Like that. So the footnote. Srimad Bhagavatam 112 proclaims, Vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tapa trayon mulanam. The highest truth is reality, distinguished from illusion, for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. Right. So here is that, where it means highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion. It's not what the facts are. It's how to take the facts and distinguish what facts is reality and what facts are illusion. Facts are facts. So this whole thing of modern thing of truth, meaning simply everybody has the right to know the facts. But the point is what facts? The transcendental facts or the illusory facts? You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, from Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. Right? The substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. Right? So in other words, the substance is Krishna, and all the categories are the manifestations, right, of his energies. Right? That's what makes the categories. So we were talking before about the Shankhya, that's the categories. But the actual substance of the categories is Krishna himself. That's what you're trying to get to. By analyzing the categories, you're doing that to get to the substance. Right? So you can either start with the substance and then see its application in the categories, or start with the categories and get back to the substance, because they're non-different. It's just a matter of whichever works. So the easiest is start with the substance. Like that. So if one catches that, great, it's done. But if not, then one analyzes it. One starts with the categories and then shows how to progress from there. And that brings one back to the Lord. But unless you brought it to distinguishing illusion from reality, then there's no use in dealing with categories. Otherwise, modern science, all it does is deal with categories. It never deals with vastu, with the substance. Right? So that would be the also the vastava vastu. You had the vastu, but then there's the vastava of the vastu. Right? It means you have the secret. You have the secret of the secret. Right? Yes.
So, science dealing with categories, the main let's say, critics would be, it's changing through the mode, so it's illusion.
Yes, it's illusion. That's the difficulty. Is because, but the principle that all those categories are based on is not changing. It's just the manifestations of that principle are constantly changing.
Mechanics?
Yeah, but the mechanics, how all those things work, is always the same. Just as a different, you know what I'm saying? It means it's like every day you go down to the bus stop and get on the bus, but there's a good chance that it could be a different bus every day. But it worked, the mechanics are the same, it does the same thing, the effects are the same, but it happens to be, you know, changing. So the principle of the transportation remains the same, but the actual detail of what bus is actually transporting you is different. Does that make sense? So the idea is that we means studying the category only becomes really of value when you understand the substance that it's based on. Otherwise, because it changes, it becomes very hard to understand. That's why scientists are confused. You know, does the energy, the particle, is it a what do you call it?
A wave or a particle.
You know, the energy, and it's got to be one or the other. Why can't it be both? You know, I mean, if Schroeder's cat can be alive and dead at the same time, why can't it be a particle and a wave? But this is the problem. They get confused. Even in their own philosophy, they can't be consistent because there is nothing to connect it to. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that they can't see, is that depending on the situation, it acts this way or it acts that way.
Can you actually call it a philosophy then?
But I mean that they're sitting there and putting together, trying to analyze something through their, you know, the intellectual
confused
mental processes. Yeah, so then you would put it in that category. Just like if it's not offered to Krishna, is it actually food?
Okay.
Yeah, you understand? You know, so it's like that. So is it actually philosophy? No, philosophy is when it's connected to the Lord. Then it becomes philosophy. But the problem is even if it's connected, it has to be fully connected. Otherwise, then there'll be something missing. And where it's missing, you'll make it up.
But could it be consistent if it's not connected to Krishna?
Will it be consistent if it's not connected to Krishna? It can be more consistent. If it's based on the Veda, it'll be more consistent.
But not fully.
It can never be fully. Because the consistent point is Krishna.
Yeah.
He is the...
Just recently I read about the Higgs particle, and it's exactly this topic. They thought they found something, but it's not connected. So when you read the article, it's confusing.
Yeah.
They found a particle of about 500 smaller than the neutron.
Yeah, yeah. They'll keep going. The point is whatever is the smallest, that's an atom. I mean, they're giving all these names to it, but actually the atom is the particle that there is nothing smaller. So just as they say atoms go together into molecules, they don't understand there's other things going to that, and they become bigger and bigger. You know, so it's just, yes.
Maharaj, I just wanted to ask, due to someone's inclination, is the idea to learn the category so we can interact with the substance, Krishna?
Yes.
From my understanding yesterday as well, is the idea is that when one reaches the spiritual world, the idea is not to let go of the substance because you use the... you don't let go of the category because you use that...
It in Krishna's service, yes. It's just that the point is as soon as you see the category in connection with the reality, then it's not a problem. Illusion means I'm dealing with categories without seeing the substance. That's the problem. Because you can become successful by understanding the category and understanding the nature of the category. So I deal with the category according to its nature. But if I don't understand the category and that nature in connection with the substance, that's all remain an illusion. So that's why there are those who can do things and are quite successful. And then there's those who analyze and aren't successful, and then those who don't analyze and don't get much done. You know, so all these things are there, but everyone remains an illusion unless it's connected back to Krishna. So that's what he's getting to, is why, since there's one actual absolute truth, why are there so many religions and so many ideas of the absolute truth? So now he's describing what is the absolute truth, because that's where you have to start. Then you drop down into these others because you're dealing with conditioning. So you already have to know what's the actual fact first, because if you try to address it directly, then what can you do? Oh no, but they're all just different ways, different paths of the same thing. You know, that's not going to answer the question. Point is, why are they different? Like that. So to get that, you have to know what actually is the same. Like that. Then you can point out.
And it seems like all value disappears when you're going, oh, it's all just different ways. Because
then you're not recognizing the individuality. And then it means there's no value to its individuality. So if it's all the same, then it's not important that it's this way or that way.
Yeah.
It makes it sound good as, no, you can do everything, but that means it's, you know, just like this.
So that's atheism.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But you can also see it breaks down relationships. You know, the girl is there and you say, oh, you're very nice. Another girl says, you know, oh, yes, you're nice. And then she says, but you said I was nice. Why are you saying she's nice? Oh, no, but all girls are nice and all that. And then as you turn, she's gone. Why? Because where's the relationship? There is nothing there. So if it's all, yes, it's all like this, then there's nothing there. It doesn't mean anything. That means it doesn't have a meaning. So why would you do it? So it just breaks down. So it's actually Mayavada philosophy. That's why the more this is talked, it seems it'll bring it all together, the more everything breaks down. So that's the thing, unless one knows what one's doing. But then that means, you know, someone's newer at this, you know, it's more sentiment. But if he actually identifies with it, they will take this statement very, very personally. You know, and very, you know, the reaction to it will be very, very volatile. Because it's their identity, it's their whole, their existence. So it's their Vastu, is their existence. But it's, of course, the naimittic, it's not nitya. And so their position is, they're the one that comes in and says all this stuff, and everyone goes, yes, like that. So when once you point out that, you know, no, it's wrong, then what is their existence? Who are they?
So it actually just means that when they say everything comes together, it just means everybody agrees with me.
Yeah, because you'd have to do that to make it work.
Yeah.
And so as long as they do, great, but others don't. Those who don't, they're fanatics. Right? And the others who do, they're broad-minded. Right? But if you're a critic of that person, then those are the yes men, and the other ones that didn't agree are the ones that are actually thoughtful. Yeah, so that's the whole point. It's there's no factual basis.
Could I apply this discussion to the holy name, the substance, and the category?
But what would you mean by, what would be a category of the holy name?
If I just see a syllables?
But this means you could, if you're looking at what the senses are dealing with the tongue and what's pronounced and why it's like that, you could. But the point is there is that sound. Just that we have to mechanically deal with it here, but that sound is actually non-different. Like that. It's not that the name is a representative, the name is. But fortunately, in the reflection, you know, you can still, these things, you can still scratch your head, you know, in the reflection. But you just have to go back to the original to be able to do it. So, in other words, it's Krishna's name. Those who chant the name and don't see it connected to the Lord don't get that benefit. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, like the Mayavadis chant. But so they won't get that benefit. Does that make sense? But if someone, you know, hears the pure name, they get that benefit. Does that make sense?
The analogy mentioned a capsule and a medicine inside. When I heard it in the class, the analogy between, you know, this
capsule, yeah, but the point is the name is the name also. The point is that I see, the thing is analyze on something that's mundane. Why take something that's,
but the doubt came up in my mind.
Yeah, but I'm just saying is that wouldn't be where you would work. You know, is the Vaishnav, but why do we give the Vaishnav a hug? Because he's actually not the body. And, you know, this, the point is, what's connected to is as good as. That's the iron and fire. because there is the actual syllable, but then there's the way that we're able to reproduce that using the mechanics of the material energy. But the point is it's in contact with the real name, so it's as good as. But at the same time, it's carrying the chit potency. That's why it works. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, in that example, we'll look at the iron and fire. You know, if someone overanalyzes that the iron is still iron, yes, but go ahead and touch it. You know what I'm saying? Because then you'd have to actually, if you believe that, then grab it, pick it up. But you won't, because you know there's more. So actually, that's the secondary aspects, and the primary is like that.
So to clarify my doubt, so what would stop a person from
getting, a little more loudly.
What would stop a person from really getting the benefit of the holy name would be not being able to connect the chit potency to the Lord. This is not there.
Yes, he's not getting. In other words, that's what we're saying. The Maya bodies haven't heard the pure name, so what they're chanting is only the form that can be generated through the material energy. But, you know, the Harinam party is going down the street, they're chanting the pure name, right? It's connected to the chit potency, so the punks across the street see that and go, hey, Hare Krishna, like this. They're chanting the name in connection with the chit potency, so it's a pure name. Their understanding of it may not be pure, that's why they'll get more or less benefit. You know, we take it that, no, the name's not pure. If I'm not chanting purely, the name's not pure. Why? Because I'm the supreme controller. So what I do is what actually is happening. No, the name is pure. If it's come in parampara, it is the Shuddha Nam. Whether you appreciate it as Shuddha Nam, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? The deity is Krishna. Now, whether you appreciate it as Krishna or not, that's another thing. The Vaishnavas are devotees. Now, whether you appreciate that or not, you see him as an ordinary person or not. But the fact is actually there. You understand? So you get the benefit if you see it. If you don't see it, then you don't get the benefit. Yes?
Sometimes we hear this point that to hear Krishna Gata through like a recording device or through a speaker is not as potent as hearing it directly from the lips.
And why would that be?
Because it's actually being transmitted through matter.
And when it comes out of the lips, then what does it go through to get to your ear? It's going through the mundane ether and air, and that air is being, you know, through the ether is being vibrated with the mundane air on your mundane eardrum, and that goes through all the, you know, inner ear, and then through all the, you know, synapses and all the mundane gray matter that's there, and then it gets down to the heart, and then you hear it. What's the difference? You know what I'm saying? It's a sentimental point. The point being made is that my spiritual master is the cat's meow, and everybody else's spiritual master is a schmuck. That's the actual point of this. So therefore, if you really want to make advancement, you have to hear from my spiritual master. Problem is when their spiritual master leaves, now they have nothing.
The same argument can be made about the book, too, because it's actually a material printed page.
So. We can make it about anything, but the problem is that's why we say the verse Mahaprasadi Govinde Nama Brahmani Vaishnave Swapa Punyabhatam Rajan Vishvaso Nagajayate. It means that those who have minimal piety, they make these kind of arguments. If you're pious, you don't make this kind of argument. But if your piety is wanting, then we make those kind of things. So that's the difficulty. Because it's still, again, all about myself. Because he's my guru, that's why he's special. Right? So because there is the element that, you know, everybody's representing God, so how do I make my spiritual master prominent? So therefore I have to make up these bogus concepts.
Yeah, or I have personal association.
Yeah, so what? Narottam Das Thakur had personal association with Vishwanath? You know, or Narottam with Krishnadas Kaviraj? You got some generational gaps there. But they heard a And that's where the potency comes from. That's the point of the siksha line. What we're talking about here is the diksha pranali. The diksha pranali is what the Babaji's get into. That's what they try to use as their claim to fame. You know, then you come down to an argument between the Radhakund Babaji's and the Govardhan Babaji's and stuff like that. And so then, depending on your line, then you'll quote that kind of stuff. So we kind of try to avoid all this. But basically speaking, this philosophy was brought up by the one and then has been followed up by the second. You know what I'm saying? And then the fun is that then when the second one goes, then they go back to the ones at the Radha Kumbha. You know, so it's a mess. They're with their guru because now he's not there, so you don't get any spiritual benefits, so they have to find a living one. And when that one dies, now they're stuck. You know, because it's how often do you find really old Indian, you know, sadhus to surrender to? You know, like that. So then they're stuck. That make any sense? Whoever it made sense to, it made sense, and whoever it didn't, then don't worry about it. Okay. Oh, yeah, still here. The substance. From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the categories. The substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord. And all emanations are relative forms of energy, right? So they're relative in that they're relative in relationship to the substance. Nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time, the energies are different from the substance. This concept is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates the simultaneously one and different philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadyasya. Srimad Bhagavatam 111 Sutra. Is it? Yeah, Bhagavatam starts with that, Janmadyasyaita, and Vedanta Sutra, that's the second sutra. The first is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. So inquire about the Supreme, and inquiring about the Supreme, then Janmadyasyaita. This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to establish the energy as the absolute. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. Development of this transcendental consciousness grounded in the conception of simultaneously one and different leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. And so you have to know both, because the monism on its own, it's all one, but then why is there differences? Mm. And to say it's all different, but then why are they one? Why is there the commonality? Why is there that connection, or that interaction, that interdependent, and that natural, yeah, mutual relationship? Like that. Ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead alone is that vastava-vastu, truly abiding substance. The jiva is a fractional part of that vastava-vastu, and maya, the external potency that produces illusion, is his energy. Therefore, vastu indicates the Supreme Lord, the jiva, and maya, all three principles together. Proper comprehension of the relationships amongst these principles is shuddha-jnana, true knowledge. Okay, so now that's come up, so now do we see where we're going with this? That was the background to establish sambandha-jnana. Mm. Right. So in other words, there is the absolute nature of everything in its absolute position, but that is all in connection with the Supreme Lord. So he's the actual substance. Everything else are the categories connected to. So every one of those, he has his eternal nature, and every category has its nature. So that means everything has its natural relationship. The jiva has its relationship with the Lord. The material energy has its relationship with the Lord. So that means the jiva also has its relationship with the material energy. Right, in connection with the Lord. So that's true knowledge. So sambandha-jnana, that's actual knowledge. Anything else other than sambandha-jnana is not actually knowledge. So when someone says you have to tell the truth, so is that sambandha-jnana? Is it based on the inherent nature of the jiva and the situation and everything there? All this relation. If it is, great. Then it is truth. But if it's not,
Something connected to Sambandha Gyan is also counted as Sambandha Gyan. I mean,
how would it not?
I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I'm understanding Sambandha Gyan as the knowledge of my relationship to Krishna and then the manifestation.
Yeah, but the point is, the manifestation is made up of what?
Krishna's energies.
And what are those energies?
Material.
Material and?
Spiritual.
And what do those spiritual look like?
Look like?
Maybe, what are these spiritual?
Jivas.
Jivas. Yes. Okay, so in other words, from your perspective, you'll look at it as you, the one jiva. Your, it means when you say like that, but the point is this, it includes all jivas.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Mm-hmm. You deal with your understanding, you know, your position, but it includes everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So there is nothing that's not Sambandha Gyan,
mm-hmm.
as far as knowledge goes.
But my consciousness plays a part in whether we classify it as Sambandha Gyan or not.
Yes, if you're connected to Krishna, you yeah. call it Sambandha Gyan. You don't connect it to Krishna, you call it something else. Truth, or skills, or facts, or science, or like that.
He has put together Krishna and his energy, spiritual energy, together. Why? Because he gave three substances: Krishna and Jiva and external energy. So the internal he categorized with Krishna together.
Yes. Because we're talking about the conditioned state, right? Because the question is, why do the world religions have all different perspectives? So we're trying to deal with what is that consciousness that comes there. So that means, what is their understanding of God, what's their understanding of the jiva, and what's their understanding of the material nature, and what's the relationship? That's where your differences come up. Because of those differences, therefore their ritual, the process of elevation is different, and their goal is different. So that means they don't understand Sambandha Gyan. So that's why there's a difference. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jaya
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jaya
Nityananda Gaura Prema.
Hare Krishna.